This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up now on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, January the 22nd. This Associated Press article caught our eye in the last week. Popular vote movement makes headway. This movement to essentially junk the Electoral College and award the presidency to the winner of the nation's popular vote moved forward with a bill that was introduced in the North Dakota State Legislature. Backers of this movement are asking states to change their laws to award their electoral votes to the candidate who wins the popular vote nationally. So this bill that was introduced in the North Dakota legislature is of some significance because this bill could reduce the political influence of small states like North Dakota. We will look into this national popular vote movement and why it exists and what kind of headway it's making and whether or not you think this is a good idea or not. Should we junk the Electoral College and award the presidency based on the popular vote? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email with your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. We are happy to have with us a board member of the National Popular Vote, an organization that advocates for the nationwide popular vote. He is Progressive Vermont State Representative Chris Pearson, who joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being here. So, why did this movement get started?
Well, that's a good question for a lot of reasons, I suppose, but chiefly, as long as Gallup has been asking the question, which goes back half a century or more, Americans have been very strongly in favor of a popular election for the president, to the tune of 70% support, as high as 80+% over those 50 years. So it's not a new idea, but what we have here is a new strategy. Turns out states have exclusive power over their electoral votes, and if enough states work together, we can get to the having a popular election without scrapping the Electoral College, just changing the way it behaves.
Yeah, to talk a little bit more about it, you're not talking about a constitutional amendment to do away with the Electoral College. You're doing this state by state, having states decide who they give their electoral votes to.
That's right. The founding fathers gave states a lot of leeway in this question. They established the Electoral College, but they really left its behavior entirely up to the states. And in the earliest elections in this country, there were many variations. Some states didn't even vote for president, but the legislature would appoint electors. We had some states having special elector regions, and if you lived in that region and you won, then your one elector went there. In fact, today, Maine and Nebraska carved their electoral votes up by congressional district. And then, of course, 48 states, including yours and mine, uses the winner-take-all system, where if you win a plurality of votes in your state, you get all of the electors. And that's how we do it in 48 states.
In Wisconsin, because John Kerry won the popular vote in Wisconsin, all of our electors cast their vote for John Kerry.
That's right. And what this sets up, and this is really the motivation for this reform effort, what this winner-take-all system creates is these battleground states and these what we call spectator states. Now, Wisconsin is a little bit of a battleground. You're not perhaps the major focus of like a Florida or an Ohio, but certainly Wisconsin enjoys mm-hmm. a fair amount of activity and mm-hmm. presidential level. What the fact is, most states, my state and at least two-thirds of the states, we get next to no attention. In my state, you couldn't even, if you went to GOP headquarters, you couldn't even get your hands on a Bush bumper sticker. And in most cases, you know, in my state, if you want to get involved in presidential elections, you get in your car and you drive to New Hampshire. And I would guess that there's a lot of states similar to you that feed in volunteers and activists to try to influence the vote in Wisconsin. We're just simply saying, look, this doesn't make sense. There shouldn't be two tiers of states. Votes should count equally the same. The person who gets the most votes in the country should win, period. And campaigns should be encouraged to go all across the country.
Yeah. And so I did look through this material, and it looks like your group has a lot of states at least introducing laws that mm-hmm. would change the way they distribute their electoral votes. This is catching on, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. This effort started in earnest in February 2006, so about a year ago, and we had immediately or nearly immediately six states look at our bill, and it did pass the Colorado Senate last spring. That was the first chamber in the country to pass it. And it then also in California had a great deal of success. In this year, 2007, we currently have about 45 to 50, well, right up to 50 states who are introducing our bill, including Representative Therese Burso in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
and then folks all around the state, in every state.
And what this bill would do, for instance, the one that Therese Burso is introducing in Wisconsin, would state that Wisconsin will award its electoral votes to whichever candidate, wins the popular vote nationally, even if, say, candidate X wins in Wisconsin, we'll give it to candidate Y if candidate Y won nationwide.
Yeah, but there's a key point that you haven't made, Joy.
Okay.
And that is that even if Wisconsin passes this bill tomorrow, the change doesn't take effect. It would be foolish for Wisconsin to give away its votes that way without having a truly national popular election in place. So there's a clause in the law that says even if it's passed, it doesn't take effect in any state until enough other states make the same change. So and that enough, that threshold, is the states that represent a majority of the Electoral College. So that's 270 electoral votes. When you reach that threshold, it doesn't matter which states have made the change. You run an election, you add up the votes in all 50 states, and then you have a majority of the Electoral College is pledged to support the person who got the most votes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's an important piece there because as we're asking a lot of states to consider this change, it's very important to note that there's no downside in making the change early. You just simply have to wait for other states. This is about states working together. It's an agreement among states to make this change.
And the whole point of this is that most people don't ever want to see again when one candidate loses the presidency like Al Gore, even though that candidate won more popular votes than George Bush.
Well, certainly a lot of people find it odd that you could win the popular vote and not win the presidency. But there's that's, you know, what we might mm-hmm. call a total misfire. And there's been four of those in the history of the country when the person who won the most votes did not win the presidency. But much more prevalent is what happened in 2004, okay? President Bush was 3.5 million votes ahead come midnight or whatever after on election night. And many of us stayed up late watching what was happening in Ohio where 60,000 votes, if 60,000 votes had switched and voted for Kerry instead of Bush, just 60,000, Bush's 3.5 million vote lead would have been meaningless. And Kerry would have won the Electoral College, even though he was 3.5 million votes behind. So there are countless examples like this throughout history, where just a few thousand votes in one or two states, in the right state in terms of the Electoral College math, would have totally changed the outcome of basically electing the second place winner. And so that sort of sets up a dangerous situation. But the other problem is the intense concentration in 2000 of campaigns and campaign attention. In 2004, the candidates and the party spent record amounts of money trying to win the presidency. Two-thirds of that money, 66% of all the campaign money, was spent on winning votes in five states. Two-thirds of all that money going to five states. I would guess Wisconsin's not even there. 99% of all the money was spent on 16 states, and I bet you Wisconsin was included in that because you guys are sort of a background state. Although that's not locked in set in stone anywhere. And in fact, the battle always seems to go the same way in Wisconsin. But indeed, you're a closely contested state.
We're talking with Chris Pearson. He is a Vermont state representative. He is a member of the Progressive Party, and he is also a board member of the National Popular Vote, an organization that advocates that states change their laws and award the electoral votes in each state to the winner of the nationwide popular vote. What do you think of this movement and this new strategy? Should we change laws to, in essence, change the Electoral College system and award the presidency to the winner of the nationwide popular vote? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're tuned to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. The UW-Milwaukee Institute of World Affairs begins its weekly Great Decisions series today, and every Monday after 5, Ben will talk with the week's guest speaker. Today, he'll talk with a guest about prosecuting war crimes. That's At Issue, the Great Decisions series, after 5 this afternoon. We're talking about a movement, the popular vote movement in this country, and why this is happening, what it would do, wondering what you think about it. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Backers of the National Popular Vote movement are asking states to change their laws to award their electoral votes to the candidate who wins the popular vote nationally. Let's go to the phones and take our first caller, Ed in Mauston. Hi, Ed, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I guess I just would like a little clarification. I heard earlier that that you felt that the less populated states would be hurt by going to a popular vote, and I guess I thought the electorate is in direct relationship to population, and I guess I'd like that clarified. And then I would like to say that I am for a popular vote, a direct percentage as to what the votes are, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. He must be talking. The news article talked about how a small state like North Dakota, that it was a big success for your movement, Chris Pearson, that it is going to change laws because presumably the conventional wisdom is a smaller state does have more political influence because of the Electoral College. Do you dispute that?
I do, and indeed you can't get much smaller state than Vermont, and so I wouldn't do this I wouldn't promote this if I thought it was going to hurt my state. And Ed's question is right on the money. It's a very popular misconception. And let me just say, mathematically, it's true. The Electoral College, as it's set up today, benefits small states in that our vote counts a little more per person than a vote in a larger state like Wisconsin or a very large state like California or Texas. So mathematically, that's true. But you mentioned influence in small states. And the smallest states, there's 13 states that have 3 or 4 electoral votes. Vermont is one of them. Of those 13 states, only New Hampshire is a battleground state in the last 6, 7 elections. It's the only one that has teetered back and forth. The rest of us are divided perfectly down the middle, 6 Democrat, 6 consistently Republican. So the upshot is that those predictable or those sort of reliably D or reliably R states, they don't have any influence because they're completely taken for granted. People don't campaign there. They don't take polls there. They don't run ads there and so on down the line. In fact, only New Hampshire gets that kind of attention. Now, if you take those 12 small states that are taken for granted by presidential campaigns, and you add up all their population, they happen to have 11 million people, roughly. They have 40 electoral votes. It just so happens that Ohio has 11 million people, but they only have 20 electoral votes. okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, clearly, no one's going to argue with me that Ohio, with their only 20 electoral votes, has way more influence than all of those small states combined that have 40 electoral votes. So mathematically, yeah, the smallest states have a small advantage. But in practice, they have absolutely no influence. And if we had a popular election, it's not that candidates would be coming to my state or North Dakota over and over. But you can bet that they would have campaigns on the ground. There would be bumper stickers and lawn signs and ways for people to get active locally. And I bet you would see a visit or two by candidates. And certainly, their team would be engaged in every state. Right now, people are they sit on the sidelines and they just wait and watch what happens in Ohio and Florida and just a few states.
Yeah. Thank you, Ed, for the call. Nick in Edgerton is with us now. Hi, Nick.
Hi there. I gave your operator one question, but I hope I can add one more.
Sure.
My initial question was, do you know what the origins of the, sort of winner-takes-all within an electoral college state comes from?
Yeah. There was, like I said earlier, in the earliest elections, there were a few different systems. Some states didn't even vote for president. In some states, the legislature just appointed electors. Then one or two states used the winner-take-all. Some states did it on a more proportional basis. But they found, what you find is that if let's say, a New York state, a big state, is using winner-take-all, and a smaller neighbor is using a proportional system, candidates are going to go to that prize. They're going to skip the smaller state where they can win a few and go right to, like, New York, which now has, I think it's 34 electoral votes. And, in fact, in the 60s, a group of small states led by Delaware filed a lawsuit against New York and said, you're using the winner-take-all system, and that's killing all of us. We're not getting any influence because you're using the winner-take-all system. Well, the Supreme Court said very rightly, look, this is a question that the Constitution obviously leaves up to states, so we can't help you. But it's just interesting that 40 years ago, small states said, hey, wait a minute, this system isn't working for us.
Okay, well, then the other thing was, as far as, the idea of the popular vote, I like that in its raw concept, but to me, in a more rural area, that tells me that all the metropolitan areas, which generally have very different concepts of what is, politically correct, are going to be deciding that for all the smaller rural areas, because they don't add up to the same amount as, basically all the large metropolitan areas around the country are going to determine who the president is from now on then. And I guess if that's not the case, I don't mind being corrected, but
sure.
That's the way it feels like in Illinois in particular, and in Wisconsin would be largely Madison, Milwaukee.
Right.
Would probably have the majority of the people in the state.
Right. Well, Nick, a popular election is not a new idea. In fact, that's how we elect everybody in this country except for the president. So you can look at some examples of how presidential campaigns are run within a particular state and also, of course, how we elect our governors and U.S. senators. Along your line of reasoning, New York State should never elect a Republican governor because all of the urbanites tend to be Democratic, is what you're suggesting, and therefore they're going to carry the election. Well, that's not true. In fact, you see Republican governors in New York with quite a lot of regularity. The other example would be looking in Ohio. There's a lot of good data that suggests that the rural voters in Ohio really carried that state for Bush in 2004. I would encourage you to look at your own governor's races, and I don't know the details well enough being from Vermont, but I would suspect that a candidate for governor is going to make sure that rural voters know they are very important to the state and to that election. So I think this is another sort of myth. The first person that runs for president under a popular election and only goes to the cities, I don't think is going to get elected. There's an awful lot of people live in the rural parts of our country, and also there's rural America is very important to the identity and to just to our sort of vision of a country. And I think a candidate is going to pick up on that and make sure that they're talking to those folks and making sure that they're included.
Thank you very much, Nick, for the call. We are talking about the national popular vote movement, which is asking states to change their laws to award their electoral votes to the candidate who wins the popular vote nationally, the presidential candidate who wins the popular vote nationally. It essentially would, it doesn't exactly do away with the Electoral College, but it certainly changes the system. So the presidency would be awarded to the winner of the nationwide popular vote. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your questions about this. We welcome your thoughts about this. There is going to be legislation introduced in Wisconsin that would award the winner of the presidency based on the popular vote. It would award Wisconsin's electoral votes to that candidate. Should we change the system to do this? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Part of this movement is aimed at preventing a repeat of 2000 when Democrat Al Gore lost the presidency despite getting more votes nationwide than George W. Bush. There are bills that are being considered in some 47 states. It was introduced last year in Colorado, Illinois, Louisiana, Missouri, New York, and California. In California, the legislature actually approved the measure, but Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger vetoed it. Our guest tells us that State Representative Therese Brousseau will introduce legislation to do this in Wisconsin. Louise in Wausau is with us next. Hi, Louise. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, the last gentleman had the same question I did, but to elaborate on that, I guess if all other political positions are by popular vote, why, when this first occurred, did somebody say, no, we're not going to elect the president by popular vote, it's going to be by electoral vote? Who would have ever come up with that idea? I mean, I think, and this has been my argument with my son for years, that if you go to vote, your vote should count. But I think people don't go to vote a lot, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, because they know that that one particular vote they're doing may not count, because that electoral vote that is going to judge whether or not our district gets him in or not is the one that's going to be the, yeah, he's got it. I don't agree with the system right now. I totally agree with you. And is there anybody that we can call or write to statewide, to let them know, so that if this is coming up on a vote or something, that they know that we're interested in this?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, and I would encourage you to, looks like in Wisconsin, our bill's going to start in the House. So talk to your local state representative, and I can't give you the bill number because it's just in drafting stages, but tell them that you want them to support Representative Brousseau's bill about the national popular vote. You know, you've raised a lot of good points, and I think it is sometimes hard to figure out where the Electoral College really came from. But basically, we know a few things. One is, obviously, in those days, you weren't running television ads that instantly broadcast across the nation. There were serious communication challenges to running for that kind of nationwide office. And so the hope was that there would be a little bit of a buffer, and that folks who were particularly plugged in could be making the decision. But the other important thing about the origin of the Electoral College is that the founders didn't have a really clear vision of how it would work, and they left the finer details entirely up to the states. They said the state shall choose an elector in a manner of their choosing, and that's really what we're taking, we're making use of, is the flexibility granted in the United States Constitution to make this change, so that we can bring our election into line with a strong majority of Americans, including the caller, have supported for a long, long time. You know, we're finding that 70%+ of people want this change. It's a pretty straightforward principle of most democracies: is one person, one vote. And that if you get the most votes, you win. And that's what we're shooting for.
Louise, thank you very much for the call. And by the way, the legislative hotline number in Wisconsin, I'll give you the toll-free. This is a number that you can call to find out information about bills, but also is a number that you can leave a message for your own state representative in terms of what you think about a bill or what you want to see happen with a bill. The number toll-free, 1-800-362-9472, 1-800-362-9472. You can call that number and voice your opinion on any legislation, whether you're for or against it. That's one way you can make your voice known. Thank you very much for the call. Joyce in Plum City is with us next. Hi, Joyce. You're on the air.
Hi. I won't take much of your time. I'll just say, repeat what the previous caller said. I would repeat it all over again. They say, go out and vote. Your vote counts. So many times it doesn't. And I can't see any common sense or reason in this day and age in not having each individual vote count. We don't have to live in the past when the communication and everything was completely different than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have thought that so many times, and I thought, oh, what? Why call? But I guess I just had to let my voice be heard.
Thank you very much, Joyce. Let me ask you, Chris Pearson, and I know you said nothing would change until a majority of states were on board with this compact.
Mm-hmm.
But still, something doesn't feel right either about Wisconsin awarding its electoral votes to a candidate who didn't win in Wisconsin, if that should be the case.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's the nature of a national popular election, is mm-hmm. the winner may or may not reflect the winner locally. I sort of equate it to, in a race for governor, you wouldn't be frustrated. Well, maybe you'd be frustrated, but you wouldn't think it was wrong for a governor to get elected if that person didn't win your county.
Mm-hmm.
That border has nothing to do with the office of governor. It's just not an important line. Under a popular election, the state border is not important. You just are voting as an American, and we're adding up all the votes in the country, and electing that person. Now, it's clear to me that the national media and observers of politics are going to know how Wisconsin voted. I think nobody is going to suddenly think that, you know, you've taken a major swing one way or the other, depending on how the outcome goes down. But no, you're right. In a sense, your electors may not reflect the vote right there in Wisconsin. But, you know, I think we're hearing callers say, and we've seen it in polls, people like the idea, if you get the most votes, you should win. And what happens in the middle of December at the state capitol in Wisconsin is of less importance to most people. And it is, you know, it is essentially a secondary, I'm not going to say trivial, but secondary step. It's sort of a formality process where the electors get together and kind of make it official. Well, right now they make it official in a way that is very bizarre and unlike any other election in this country, and I would guess around the world. I mean, as we try to help other countries promote democracy in their country, we sure don't design a system that's anything like this.
Yeah, let me ask you to respond to a University of Denver law professor, electoral college expert, apparently, according to this an Associated Press article. Robert Hardaway warned that the proposed interstate compact may need approval from Congress to be legal, but also thinks it's a terrible idea. In a close presidential election, recounts would be demanded in every precinct and every hamlet in the United States. The practical problems are absolutely enormous.
Sure.
What do you think?
Well, Hardaway misses one really, really important point. Joy, you answer this for me. If you have one election with 120 million votes, or you have 51 separate, or if you divide that up into 51 separate elections, which is going to be more likely to cause a close election? Now, clearly, if you have it broken down into 51 chunks, it's much more likely that one of those chunks mm-hmm. is going to be close, okay, cause a recount. And Florida is the latest example that we can remember. But, of course, many states have a recount here and there for their statewide offices. But the fact is, if you are combining all the votes in the country, it's very, very unlikely that you're going to be close. The closest election ever, in the Al Gore case in 2000, Al Gore and George Bush, it was a half a million margin of half a million votes. I mean, that's not particularly close. That's not going to trigger any kind of national recount. In Washington State a few years ago, they had a very, very tight governor's race, and that prompted several recounts. Well, if you extrapolate those results, that would be the equivalent of a presidential election being decided by a 4,000-vote margin. We've never come remotely close to that. The closest ever was 120,000 votes in 1960. So the fact is, mathematically, you're just far, far less likely to need a recount. His other point about congressional approval is interesting. The Constitution would make it pretty clear that for states to act together like this requires congressional approval. There is also a lot of Supreme Court law that suggests, or case law that suggests, that that is not the case, given that this is an issue that is entirely within the purview of states. Okay, so it doesn't infringe on any national law or national right that's held at the federal level. So we're not entirely sure that it would need to go to Congress. The other piece, though, and this is perhaps more important, is politically speaking, by the time we come to a point where we may need Congress to weigh in, the fact is we'll only get there if a majority of the states have signed on to this idea. And, of course, that means a majority of the members of Congress, their states will have already said, yes, we'd like to do this change. And that's not a guarantee, of course, but the political reality could be that Congress would be likely to react to that kind of political pressure.
We are talking with a member of a national movement to change the way we elect presidents in this country. It would essentially change the Electoral College system, and states would be changing their own laws to award their electoral votes to the candidate who gets the popular vote nationwide. It would be a popular vote rather than an electoral college election. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Progressive Vermont State Representative Chris Pearson. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. She'll be joined by the author of a petition by a group of Methodist ministers to prevent the library at Southern Methodist University from being named for President George W. Bush. Controversy over naming the library at Southern Methodist University after President George W. Bush. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. Patricia in Milwaukee is our next caller on the popular vote movement. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I'm very grateful for this person and whoever worked with him to enlighten us that this is a possibility, because I had always thought it would have to be a constitutional amendment, and those are very hard to come by. But secondly, I was wanting to some discussion on how it will impact the present television calling of an election before people in the West, and certainly in Hawaii, even get to the polls. I'm hoping that this would have a positive effect on that and not be calling the president early. Do you think that would be?
Well, Patricia, that's a hard question to answer, but I can tell you in Hawaii is perhaps one of our more promising states for passage quickly. I believe it's the chairs of each of the major political parties are getting behind our bill and will be promoting it in their legislature. So we feel pretty bullish about our chances in Hawaii, and I think it's fair to say one of their motivations is this question. The idea that, and this gets back to the safe states, the idea that two-thirds of our states are totally taken for granted. And what happens, the reason the networks are free or feel at liberty to make the call very early is that they know that Hawaii is going to be reliably Democratic. They know that California is going to be reliably Democratic, and so on down the line. And they wait for a few results from the more up-in-the-air states like your own, like Pennsylvania and so forth. And once they feel they have a grip on that, then they just go ahead and blurt it out in their rush to be first. I'm not sure if our reform would change that, but I got to believe it makes it harder. You can't just take for granted the numbers. You may know that a majority of voters in California are likely to vote for the Democrat, but you don't know how strong that majority is going to be. So I do think that would be a positive side sort of benefit of what we're shooting for.
Thank you, Patricia. Respond, please, Chris Pearson, to another political science professor, this one from the University of Minnesota, Lawrence Jacobs, who is concerned about this proposal. He says that this would reduce the influence of small states and lead candidates to spend more time campaigning in big populated voter-rich states like California, New York, and Texas, unless, you know, so that's that they'll spend more of their time in the states that have more voters.
Well, you know, we've talked about this a little bit. This concept is built on the premise that the small states are benefiting right now from the current system, that our slight mathematical advantage in a small state in terms of our electoral votes is helping, and it directly leads to influence and to our seeing candidates and to having a debate here. That is absolutely not the case. It has not been the case for 25 years or more. Small states are totally taken for granted. We happen to be the small states, as I've said, divided pretty well right down the middle, 6 Republican, 6 Democrat, 1 battleground state, which is New Hampshire, and they do get attention. So, you know, the idea that we could have less influence is just ridiculous because we have none today.
We'll take another caller. George in Hudson. Hi, George.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking this call and your usual good job, Joy.
Oh, thanks.
I have, first of all, a question about something that came up a bit ago, but then I want to make an emphatic statement. The question is, in the case of the New York and New Jersey compact setting up the Port Authority, was any congressional action taken then?
I believe it was, George, but I'm not sure of that.
All right. The emphatic feeling, then, is something that I tried to express to the and cram down the throat of the editor of the New Yorker when I first read about this movement about a year ago, and that is the fair vote effort should be combined with efforts for instant runoff voting. The biggest problem, potential problem with instant runoff voting is the possibility of no major party getting a majority in the Electoral College and therefore ending up with an even worse situation than in Florida in 2000. Things get settled in the House of Representatives or in the Supreme Court, whereas some adjustment of the wording of the compact for fair for national popular vote to allow for instant runoff voting in so that a national majority, a real national majority, was as opposed to the possible non-majority if there were more than two parties, that real national majority determined the winner. That is my emphatic statement.
Yeah. George raises a point that comes up from time to time. The fact is that today, if nobody gets a majority of the electoral votes, okay, for whatever reason, let's say Ross Perot wins one state that happens to just throw the balance, then the whole system is brought into the Congress, and Congress, with every state getting one vote, and the Senate doing, I suppose they each have two votes for the vice president, that the president is selected in the House with every state getting one vote. Most people agree that's a very strange and dangerous scenario. Actually, our reform would remove that option because we would be guaranteeing a majority of the electoral vote to whomever gets the most votes in the country. I agree with George's sentiment, frankly, that it wouldn't be a bad idea from my point of view to have some kind of threshold, a majority threshold is often talked about. But the fact is that our reform effort doesn't address that, and I think it still would be a major leaps forward. And from what we see today, where so many people are totally shut out.
Thank you very much, George. Mark in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Neither Wisconsin nor Vermont were a state in 1787 when the Founding Fathers created the Electoral College. And I think they had a pretty good idea, and I'm reluctant to get rid of it. And I guess my other question is, if we're going to have a one-person, one vote, why wouldn't we change the U.S. Senate to reflect population?
Yeah, well, why do you like, first tell me why you like the Electoral College too, Mark. You said you're happy with it. Why do you like it?
Because I realize it skews it towards small states. And I kind of disagree with some of the things you said, but I realize, I mean, South Dakota gets 3 electoral votes.
And they get no visits from candidates, yeah. And they're not polled.
Well,
and
it's
they
because
don't
the Republicans
have campaign apparatus.
Yeah, maybe they would if they were if they were swing states, though. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
If you're a swing state, you get the attention. If you aren't, you don't.
That's right.
It's a Republican state.
Yeah, so. It's a safe state, and so they're not a swing state, and so they don't get attention. And by the way, this is not a problem just for small states. California, Texas, New York, those are the 3 biggest states we've got. They're all safe states. Nobody campaigns there except for fundraising. There's also another side issue here. And Joy, I'm hearing a bit of an echo. Is that coming through?
No, it's fine now. I heard it before, too.
There's issues. There's 2 things that we haven't really talked about. One is polling. In the 2 years running up to the 2004 election, the Bush campaign team acknowledged that they only polled in 18 states. So for 2 years, the opinion of folks in 32 of our states had zero value to the president's campaign. And I'm not picking on him. John Kerry talked about his 18-state strategy. So, you know, to me, there's something desperately wrong with a system that just automatically shuts out folks in 32 states. Here's another little example. This country, we have talked a lot about Cuban immigration. Okay, a lot. I mean, every presidential candidate comes down with an opinion on that. Well, when you look at the numbers of people that actually immigrate from Cuba, it's pretty insignificant, especially compared to folks coming through the Mexican border. And you're starting to hear about that a little bit more. It's more of an issue. But the question is, why do we spend so much energy learning about immigration from Cuba? Well, the answer is because Florida is a swing state, and it has been for a while. And so it's very important to a small segment of the population in Florida, and it becomes part of the presidential debate. So how many issues are out there that are totally ignored because they're only important to people on the West Coast? They're all safe states. Or people in the majority of the Midwest, they're all safe states.
Yeah.
There's other pieces to this that are troubling.
Do you want to talk about Mark's comparison that, you know, each state, no matter what population, has 2 senators?
Yeah. Well, I will talk about that in one way. There used to be a time when, of course, we didn't vote for our senators. The state legislatures appointed them, okay? And there was more and more pressure that people said, this is wrong, we would like to have more direct say over who our senators are. And what happened was, it wasn't a constitutional amendment that started this. It was an action in the states. And in fact, it was Oregon that got this started. And what they did was they ran advisory elections. And so I went to the ballot, and I checked off a box that looked surprisingly just like a normal ballot for a U.S. senator. And then the process still happened that the legislature appointed that person, but they just started appointing whoever the advisory vote awarded the office to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that movement started in a state, and it swept across to the point where we had the 17th Amendment, which allowed us to vote directly for senators. A majority of the Senate was already elected by the people. A majority of states were using this method. So there's a lot of history that backs up what we're trying to do, which is states going first and saying, hey, this doesn't make sense from our point of view. We don't want to be taken for granted anymore. We'd like a popular vote for president.
Now, thanks to Mark, and we'll go next to Mara in Janesville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really think there's a lot of benefit to having a more popularly based system, but my concern is that this particular alteration would make it extremely difficult for third-party candidates to run for president, even more than it is now. And there was an earlier NPR show about a different system of voting where everybody casts two votes, a primary vote and a secondary vote, the idea being if the candidate who received their primary vote didn't receive a certain percentage, then their vote would automatically be recast for their second choice. And one of the ideas behind that was to encourage people to vote for third-party candidates and not be concerned that if they did, they were essentially throwing away their vote. And this particular system of change would just make that impossible. And I wonder if you've given any thought to that.
Sure. Mara, I appreciate your call. I don't see why this, what we're proposing, a popular vote versus today's system, makes it easier or harder. I think it's hard, very hard, to get elected outside of the two parties. And let me tell you that I'm actually elected from a third party, the Vermont Progressive Party, and we have members in the Vermont House and have had for 15 plus years. So, you know, I would be sympathetic to that concern, but I don't see the change we're proposing having a plus or a minus for that consideration.
Yeah, and we'll take one last call from Steve in Galesville. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Historically, the Constitution was written in such a way that the southern states were heavily weighted as far as, you know, the four-fifths vote for black populations, et cetera, and that was counted into representation in Congress. The Electoral College was put into the Constitution to somewhat shift that balance back to northern states, which were more populous, namely New York. The other thing is that we never had, back in those days, popular elections. The normal common person never voted, and the president was picked by the state legislatures.
Yeah, so what do you think of this movement to put it back on the popular vote?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm very ambivalent about it. I don't much care one way or the other, and I don't think it really makes much difference. If you think somebody's going to go to North Dakota to campaign when we have a popular election, I think you're sadly mistaken.
It's not going to make a whole lot of difference, according to Steve, Chris Pearson.
Well, Steve, you know, I have never argued that the candidates are going to spend weeks on end in the small states. But I can tell you, living in a small state, that, A, my neighbors, if they want to get involved in presidential elections, they go to another state. The state next door happens to be New Hampshire, which is more competitive. I think that's weird and doesn't make a lot of sense. B, you can't get a bumper sticker if you go down to GOP headquarters here in Vermont. I think that's really strange. So that while the candidates may not visit everywhere, and I actually think they would just quickly, but at the very least, they will have campaigns going. They will poll my neighbors and ask them what they think. Right now, we're just shut out. There's no reason to do that.
We got
to
leave it
there.
There's
no reason not to do it under a popular vote. Let me just say,
we're out of time. NationalPopularVote.com. Thank you so much for being with us. Vermont State Representative Chris Pearson, a member of the National Popular Vote, an organization that advocates for the National Popular Vote.